Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, 2 weeks before the actress Helen McCrory passed away recently, she told her husband to love again, telling her children, "I want daddy to have girlfriends, lots of them. You must all love again. Love isn't possessive." But not everyone gets the time to have that conversation, and moving forward after the loss of a loved one can be hard to navigate. Well, I'm joined this morning by Sinead Hingston and Helen Lamb, both of whom have been through this experience, and grief psychotherapist Liz Gleeson. You're all very welcome. Thank you for joining me this morning. Sinead, I'm going to start with you. Will you start by telling us a little bit about Jeff? You met in 2008.
Yeah, so I am. Good morning, first of all.
Good morning.
I met him in very late 2007, and we got together then kind of early 2008. He actually lived in the UK at the time, so we did a little bit of long distance, and then he moved over to Ireland. We lived here for about a year, and it was obviously at the very start of the recession, so it was quite difficult for him to get work here. And he was travelling back and forth to London quite a bit, so we decided then to move over to London. So we moved over to London in 2009, and we settled, I suppose. He worked for Sky Sports, so I kind of dipped in and out of various jobs just trying to get settled myself. I'd never lived away from home before. So yeah, that year we got engaged that Christmas, which was very special. And then it was kind of wedding planning kicked in very soon after that. So we got married the following Christmas at home.
In Ireland?
In Ireland, yes. Yeah, so the year of the snow, December 2010.
Oh, yeah.
It all melted away the night before the wedding. And yeah, we got married Christmas 2010, and then we found out that we were expecting the following April. So we were due then the following Christmas. So it was all Christmas, Christmas, Christmas.
Okay, so your baby was due Christmas 2011.
2011, yeah, sorry. So yeah, we found out in the April that we were due to have a baby in 2011.
So happy times, just married, baby on the way.
Oh, absolutely. And we had actually, when we went on honeymoon, his mum sadly passed away while we were away. So the start of the marriage was pretty sad and pretty tough, trying to navigate through that grief. So finding out we were pregnant was just the best news ever. It really lifted the cloud at the time and kind of gave everybody just a bit of a spark again. Then that summer, then my mum and dad were heading over to Portugal. And they just said to us, look, we're staying. It was a friend of my dad's place. And he said, look, there's plenty of room. Why don't yourself and Jeff join us? So we just booked flights and we headed over in the July. And it had been pretty manic with work for both of us in the run-up to the holidays. We were just so looking forward to getting over there. And we were due to stay on for a week after my mum and dad had gone home. And then I had just suggested that Jeff's dad come over with us as well.
Mm-hmm, because he'd obviously lost his wife only a few months beforehand. So you were all there enjoying this holiday in Portugal when tragedy struck, is the only way I can think of to put it, because it's so shocking what happened.
It just was so sudden and ridiculous. Like, when I think back now, it still seems very unreal. But we decided the morning that all the parents were leaving that we'd go out on one of the organised boat trips along the Algarve coast and just to see the caves. And we took off from Villamora Marina, and it was just a stunning day. And they anchored eventually kind of just outside the caves, I suppose, just away from the caves. And the captain said, look, anyone who wants to jump in for a swim while you're waiting for the dinghy to come out of the caves with the first set of people, you're more than welcome to. So initially, Jeff wasn't going to jump in. And, I kind of flagged him a little bit and I was like, you're going to regret it. Like, he was such a water baby. I was like, just go for a swim. Look where we are. We're in heaven. Just go for it. And he was worried that he'd have to sit on the dinghy with wet shorts on. And I said, she'll dry in 2 seconds. Like, go on, jump in. So he jumped in. He swam around very happily for 5 or 6 minutes and kind of, took loads of photographs of him in the water. And then I took my eyes off him for about 40 seconds. And whatever happened in that 40 seconds, when I look back, he was struggling to breathe and he was lying on his back. And just had his, you know, mouth open, and he was really struggling to catch a breath from what I could see, and I was shouting his name and he wasn't responding, and yeah, then he just went limp. That was him.
What do you think happened?
The autopsy was very vague. The official cause of death was accidental drowning, but we all kind of believe that he was stung by a jellyfish and just went into anaphylactic shock and had some sort of seizure. So yeah, it was very vague, and they didn't do a lot of the tests. You know, they deemed it unnecessary expenses, and it was very hard trying to deal with.
And you're there, pregnant. You were about 20 weeks at that stage, were you?
I was 19 weeks. Yeah, 19 and she weeks. Came exactly 19 weeks to the day later. So, but yeah, 19 weeks pregnant, and I mean, yeah, like your whole world goes from absolutely heavenly to turned upside down in an instant. You know, we were renting in the UK. We didn't have a house. You know, we didn't have a mortgage to be paid off by insurance. We didn't have life insurance. We just got married 7 months before, so we were still kind of in the, you know, in the process of sorting all of those important things out when you get married and you start a family. So we really had, you know, a little bit of savings that we had, and it was just, yeah, I can't even describe the feeling of fear that hits you when it's just so unexpected, you know, you just can't catch your breath.
And then you moved home then, is that what you did?
Yeah, so we were renting in the UK, but there's no way I could have afforded to stay, and being pregnant as well, it just wasn't. It wasn't suitable. So I actually went home from Portugal, went home to Dublin from Portugal. And obviously the funeral happened that weekend. And then we went back, myself and my mum went back over, maybe, I think it was about 2 weeks after the funeral, to pack up the house. I have to say, like, the person I was renting from in the UK was just the most understanding human in the world. Like, he was like, take your time whenever you're ready to come back over, you know, just don't worry about it. So we went back over and packed up our life into boxes and hoped to God the delivery truck arrived and was meant to. And then I went back home. So back in with mum and dad at 30 years old and pregnant with a dog.
Gosh, I'm going to come back to you in a minute, Sinead, but I want to find out from Helen, about your own story, because it was in 2013 when your husband died.
Hi, Claire. Hi. It's shocking to hear Sinead's story as she tells it. Our timeline was very similar insofar as when we were getting married, when we were getting engaged. Keelan was a really adventurous, spontaneous
Helen guy. Do you know what, your line is just dropping in and out a little bit. We might try and get you back on a better line if that's okay, because I want people to hear what you had to say. And Sinead, that means I'm going to come back to you again now and talk about what happened. I mean, I assume for you, everybody around you was saying, oh, you've got to look after yourself, you've got to look after your baby. But how difficult was it to bear in mind that you've got to try and keep your mind and body healthy through all of this?
It was like a form of torture. Like, I just remember one day, you know, sitting by his grave. Sorry, I'm going to get emotional. And, you know, you're heavily pregnant and you're heaving, crying. And in the back of your mind, you, like, think of the baby. And I didn't want to have to think of the baby. I just wanted to grieve for Jeff. I wanted to just be able to cry when I needed to cry. I couldn't eat very much. I remember living on brioche. It was the only thing that I could actually stomach at the time. And I just remember, like, the guilt, and, you know, you have this whole other wave of guilt going on, because you're trying to look after this tiny thing in your stomach, and at the same time you feel guilty because you're not freely able to grieve for, you know, your husband who you've just lost. But I remember I went to the psychiatrist in Hollis Street all through the second half of my pregnancy, and I don't know where I'd be for him. He was just so incredible. He just said, look, you know, your baby's going to be fine. You know, you need to be able to, you need to be able to grieve and not have to worry about this. Like, this baby will live off you and will thrive off you and your body. So you just need to focus on your own grief and stop worrying about this little tiny thing. Mm-hmm. It was all just very surreal. You know, you feel like you're living in this bubble, and there's people rallying around you, and you genuinely want the world to just stop turning just for a little while, just so you can get your head around it. I remember walking through Dundrum Shopping Centre at one stage, and you know, it is the weirdest feeling. Walking through a shopping centre, really busy, really, you know, vibrant, full of life, people chatting and laughing, and you just want to scream, can you just stop? My husband's just died. Like, do none of you know that my husband, like, you know, what I'm going through? And it really was, you know, the hardest lesson to learn. You really have no idea what somebody is going through.
Yeah, just, I might bring Liz in at this point. Liz Gleeson, grief psychotherapist. Liz, thanks for being with us today. Is that
Good morning.
Is that a common theme in the people that you deal with and the experience that they've been through? You're going through something so profound and so deeply shocking that it's such a shock to you that the rest of the world then is can continue operating.
Absolutely. And Sinead, just to say, very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Grief can be so utterly brutal, and unless you've lost somebody who's very close to you, people really don't understand. Like, it affects us on a physical level, an emotional level, psychologically, spiritually. It is so deeply personal and isolating and lonely. It's like a nuclear explosion has gone off in your system and nobody else knows what's going on inside you. Very, very lonely. And, you know, people give platitudes and try to help. And a lot of these platitudes are euphemisms. You know, you'll get better with time, or you stay strong. They only serve to isolate the grieving person even more. Because very few people can actually sit with the rawness of grief. You know, really just accompany someone and allow them to have the depth and breadth of the expression of grief that they need to have. So people find themselves, you know, like Sinead described there, just in their own little surreal world, unreachable sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And Sinead, can you just bring us through what happened then? You know, your baby is born. How did all that go for you? How did you cope in the early months after her birth?
So I mean, I could write a book and people actually wouldn't believe it. I didn't have the easiest delivery with Lily. So I had a lot of recovery after it. I was in and out having various different procedures done. So I had her. She was born on the 11th of December, so she was 2 weeks early. And I had more surgery the following March. So it wasn't until the July or August, which was Jeff's first anniversary of the following year, that I finally got the all clear from having Lily. So there was a lot of bitterness, there was a lot of anger, you know, a lot of shouting at people saying, like, why is this happening to me? You know, why couldn't the delivery just have been smooth sailing and I could concentrate on trying to be a mom, but I couldn't sit. You know, I had to lie down on my side because I was so, there was just a lot of issues after having her. And also navigating motherhood, living with your parents, you know, which was, I have to say, again, incredible. I don't know where I'd be without them. But you're 30 years old. You know, you're meant to be experiencing this new life with your husband. And it was just the most bittersweet feeling of elation and devastation all mixed into one. And there's nothing in life that can prepare you for these feelings.
And,
you know,
then, and because, Sinead, Jeff's family were in the UK. I don't know how well you knew them, but I mean,
Jeff's family live in Ireland. They're all here.
Oh, they live in Ireland. So, but they had had their own grief to deal with on the double, because they'd lost, like, his mum had died in the January.
Yeah.
So how did they cope with what you were going through and the arrival of Lily and so on?
It was just really hard for everybody. I think the shock of losing Jeff just had such a massive impact on everybody. We just, you know, we did our best to try and navigate through the grief and, you know, what the best thing to do was. You know, I obviously can't speak for them. I can only imagine how horrific the whole situation was for them as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Jeff and I lived in the UK for a lot of our relationship. So, you know, the relationship hadn't been built up very much with them beforehand, if you know what I mean. So it's just a very hard situation to navigate.
But then life moves on, and was it 2 years later? It was the end of 2013 you met Michael.
Yeah, it's about 2.5 years later. I actually knew Michael from when we lived, and I knew of him from when we lived in London. I played hockey for Richmond Hockey Club, and Michael actually played for the same club. So I knew, you know, he kind of hung around with the girls that I would have hung around with. but had never been introduced to him. Like, I obviously was engaged to Jeff, and he also had a girlfriend at the time, so there was never any introduction made.
Mm-hmm.
So we were at a mutual friend's wedding then, and I actually wasn't going to go to the wedding because I didn't want to go on my own. It was in Italy, and I was just not there yet. And I remember Mum sitting me down and saying, you need this. You need to just take a couple of days to yourself, go and spend time with the girls, and enjoy yourself, Sinead. You know, you can't... It's not all about Lily and you. It has to also be a little bit about you as well. I got on the plane by myself and I went over to this wedding, and it was the night that I got there, and we got chatting, myself and Michael. And, you know, it was easy because he knew the whole story. He knew about Jeff. He knew about Lily. He knew I was widowed. You know, I didn't have to explain anything to him.
Mm-hmm.
There was an instant connection with him. We got on extremely well. He's very laid back and very kind of accepting of the whole situation. So it happened really organically. Like, he lived in the UK. So for the first 3 years of our relationship, it was long distance, and which I think was exactly what I needed and probably what he needed as well a little bit.
So that it moved a lot slower maybe than it might have done.
Yeah. But he was just, I don't know. I mean, he's an incredible guy. He's just very accepting of the situation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very accept. Like, I'm a very open person. I talk about Jeff quite easily, and I don't have any issues or anything but having a conversation about Jeff. And Michael is exactly the same. He doesn't mind a conversation being had about Jeff. It's not like you're talking about an ex-boyfriend anyway. It's a very different kind of conversation. And I think that just made it really easy.
And you two are married now?
We are. We got married nearly 2 years ago now, which is just mental. Just before COVID started, which was August 2019. So we were very lucky.
And you have Dylan?
We do. So Dylan arrived. We actually bought a house in the end of 2017. And I was expecting Dylan. So we moved in January 2018, and Dylan actually arrived 6 weeks early, so just a couple of weeks after we moved into the house.
Gosh, he was early,
and
yeah.
Still as impatient today as he was. we got remarried, or I got remarried, and it's so weird. I mean, I'm now 40, which is obviously, Jeff has gone 10 years this year, which is another huge milestone in my heart that I have to get over. But it's just... I don't know. I can't even describe it. I feel extremely lucky, I suppose, to have met another incredible man, but yet still have Jeff's memory very much alive as well.
Do you feel, as you look back and as you tell your story this morning, that that whole experience has profoundly changed you?
Oh, without it. I literally was just talking to my best friend before on the phone. She was like, she needs to talk to me, not you. But yeah, I mean, I am not the same person that I was back then, and I don't think I ever will. It just changes you, you know. There's things that you would never expect to happen in life, and when they happen to you, you just, it completely changes you. You become a completely different person. You see life very, very differently.
Mm-hmm. Liz, can I bring you in here again? Because
sure.
We're dealing with, first of all, the grief and the shock and the trauma, but then learning how to go on, live a life, fall in love again, get married again, meet your Michael, go and, you know, have a new life and a new relationship. And for some people, it can be very hard to make that adjustment.
Yeah, there's so many different factors, Claire, that come into play. And I'm delighted for Sinead. You know, there's a few things she said there, like I'm really touched by her mum. And, you know, not only did her mum foster that resilience in her, but encouraged her, you know, come on, you can do this. And too often we say to people, oh, you need counselling and maybe you should go and speak to someone. And we kind of undermine their own natural flexibility and resilience to deal with grief, whereas Sinead's mom was encouraging her to live again. And as Sinead has so beautifully said, she didn't move on. She didn't get over. She learned to accommodate her grief and continues to love her husband, both her husbands, and have love again. We're hardwired for connection. We deserve love and connection. If we have experienced profound loss, it does change us. It's like we need to construct ourselves again, construct our lives again, and everybody is entitled to have love again. So we need to, you know, challenge some of these societal things, like when we say, oh, they'll never get over that. It's not true. You know, we'll always remember the person we love who has died, but we can learn to integrate that grief and we can learn to be happy
again. But Liz, you sound the warning that if you do not deal with your grief properly, you could end up with problems down the line. And I'm thinking about the people who come to you years later with prolonged grief disorder.
That's right, yeah. Well, we know from the research that around 60% of people who experience a significant loss will be okay without any counselling or psychotherapy. They need just the usual supports from the community, family, friends, information, validation and support. And then about 30% of people need perhaps a little bit of extra support, such as a volunteer group or to meet other people who've had a similar loss to them. And then we know that around 10% of people, over time, their grief doesn't integrate. So it stays really profound. And the yearning for the lost person continues for a few years after the loss. Mm-hmm. And this is where, I don't like to use the word stuck, but it's used a lot where grief gets stuck, basically where people, maybe there's a blame factor. If only I hadn't done that, or if only I hadn't gone out that day, or I should have, you know, phoned him and maybe it would have been different. Usually there's something that they regret or they're questioning around the type of death, around the time of death, I should say, that makes the grief go off track. And so with prolonged grief disorder, the treatment is complicated grief therapy. It's different to regular counselling or psychotherapy. It's like we're trying to get the grief train back on the tracks.
Okay.
You know, we're not getting rid of the grief. We're just getting it back in the right direction again.
Okay. Well, Liz, you have created an online grief education program for anyone working in healthcare. And if anyone wants to take a look at that course, they can do so at shapesofgrief.com. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Helen's line back in a way that would work and so that we could hear her properly and do her story justice. But we will come back and speak to Helen Lamb again. In the meantime, Liz, thank you very much for joining us, Liz Gleeson, grief psychotherapist. But in particular, Sinead, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all. We wish you and Michael and Lily and Dylan all the very best. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks so much, Claire.
Thanks so much, Claire. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.